I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably should.
Hello, and welcome back to Second Shot Podcast, the podcast where we give shitty things a second shot. My name is George Tunn.
I'm Devin.
Welcome.
So professional.
Yes.
As always.
I'm very professional. My name is George Dunn, as I was saying. I am the co-host of this podcast, along with my other co-host, Devin Newsom.
Yes.
He's a gasman.
I get gas from time to time. I've been drinking some...
At least it's coming out of the attic and not the basement.
I didn't say it wasn't coming out of the basement.
I heard that from Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, man, that show was so weird.
The movie was good.
I don't think I ever saw the movie.
The movie's the best part.
There's a bubble in my mouth. Jimmy Neutron, really?
Boy Genius. Yeah, the movie was... I mean, I haven't seen it since I was fucking 13 or 14 or whatever it came out, but it was pretty good. I got it on DVD. I watched it a few times.
I remember the one movie they did where they, like, mashed it up with the Fairly Odd Parents, and, like, Timmy Turner was... in the digital world, and Jimmy Neutron
that.
Was in the cartoon world.
Fairly Odd Parents was pretty solid.
That show was funny.
It was really funny. Cosmo. I think Cosmo was a little too much at times.
Yeah.
I always had that image of, what was the joke? I think Timmy said something like, I learned something today, and Cosmo was just like, what not to cook bacon with your shirt off or something like that? And then he cooks bacon and it splashes on his chest and he just makes this horrified face, but there's no sound. And it's really funny, but it just sticks in my head all the time.
That show was one of the funnier cartoons. That was like, after SpongeBob came out, I feel like that was like the next one to be like weird like that.
What was his, superhero, the chin? Not the cleft. Because it was Jay Leno.
It was the Crimson Chin.
The Crimson Chin.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Jay Leno played him, and then he had a bunch of, like, super friends that I can't remember. They were just, like, body parts.
Yeah,
like, just one was a giant. I think one was a giant hand, or maybe he was a bad guy. It was a hand or something. But.
A hand or a foot or something. Mm-hmm. I forget.
Yeah.
But, the Crimson Chin. What was his real name? He had a crazy name, too.
Chinnerson.
Chinneroo.
Chin-chin-chin-chin-chin-chin-chiru. I watch Fairly Odd Parents because I'm a millennial.
Perfect.
Thank you. Well, how was your week, Devin? You watch any Fairly Odd Parents this week?
No Fairly Odd Parents.
I think we're just going to turn this show into a Fairly Odd Parents podcast.
I'm down. Like, that market is
the
not
Fairly
untapped.
Odd 20-somethings.
The Fairly Pod Parents.
Oh, that's so much better.
Itself.
Why didn't I think of that? It
makes it sell.
Yeah.
It's
copyrighted. Anyone listening to this who, if you're ever found subscribing to the show and then making a Fairly Odd Parents podcast, it's ours.
It's ours, and we will come for you.
We will get all of your 50 listeners a week.
Taking them all. We're coming for them. Don't do it. so threatening. It was a busy week. I went to, and I spent a lot of money. I went to, too much money. I went to the Cavs game 3 of the NBA Finals last week.
That's the one they won?
They, of course, lost.
They lost that one?
They lost that one. They won game 4 and then disappointingly lost game 5, and so that was sad.
Womp womp.
Womp womp. I also went to an Indians game. The Indians game.
Who did they play?
Comparatively.
The Astros.
They played the LA Dodgers, which I'm talking like they're
hey,
still
yo,
the
I'm
Brooklyn
an LA
Dodgers.
Dodger. Were they the Brooklyn Dodgers originally?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was Jackie Robinson's team, I think.
I know he's black. That's about it. Like, I know Harrison Ford was in the movie about him.
Number 42. It's retired now. Nobody can wear 42.
Chiwetel Ejiofor? Who played
I think
him?
So, yeah.
Oh. I like him. Black Panther. A trailer.
That happened this week.
I didn't watch the trailer for a few days. Like... thinking, like, well, I'll wait, you know, and see it in the big screen or something.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait. So I'm like, there's no way they're going to get Run the Jewels in this trailer. Because I'm like, what song are they? Because maybe it's Kanye or something. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, Run the Jewels. I'm like, oh, wait. Obviously, they're going to Run the Jewels because there's that Black Panther comic book issue that is just the Black Panther doing the Run the Jewels, you know, gun and chain thing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, the trailer looks great.
But that was one of the variant covers you're talking about there. Yeah, those things
are
awesome.
It's like issue 3 or 4, I think.
I love those things.
Yeah.
But oh my god, that trailer! Like that song was perfect for it. The step into the spotlight thing, I feel like, is so like you can't pick a better song than that. Like
Ryan Coogler's a really fucking good director. So I mean, did you see Creed?
I still have not seen Creed.
It's so good.
I'm pretty bad.
It's so good.
Everyone's telling me. I need to watch it.
So I'm very excited to see what he does with this. What do you think of it? I'm assuming you liked it.
Yeah, I mean, like, just the beginning, opening scene, tell me something. What do you know about Wakanda? I'm excited to see Andy Serkis and Martin Freeman.
I keep forgetting Martin Freeman was in Civil War and that weird accent he has.
Oh, yeah.
Weird American accent.
Yeah. I forget his character's name, but he's like a legit character.
Yeah, I never.
But
it's a little too deep for me.
It's a deep cut. But I mean, that part was sweet. But they're like, let's get the white people in the beginning because it's gonna be this gigantic, amazing black cast for the rest of it. Like, there's so many people in that I forgot they cast for it.
I almost said it's like, well, you're getting the audience like, oh, these characters. It's like, wait, no one knows who these fucking guys are. Andy Serkis, 5 minutes of the second Avengers.
Yeah.
Probably one of the lesser Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And that guy that everyone forgets is in Civil War. And then they cut to the Black Panther. And they're like, oh, okay.
And they're like, oh, okay. And then you have Michonne from Walking Dead. You have Lupita Nyong'o. You have
Michael B. Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger. You have Forrest Whitaker.
I didn't see Forrest Whitaker. I gotta watch that trailer.
Yeah, he's like he's the guy with all the dots all over his face.
Okay.
Who else do you have? You have what's his face? The dude from Get Out is in it.
Oh really?
Yeah,
I like him a lot.
Yeah, there's a ton of like this cast is amazing. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to see this movie. It looks so cool. The technology, the colors looks fucking amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Black Panther was fucking badass in Civil War, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
Watching that bulletproof costume.
I wonder, like, do you think there's going to be a D'Antwoord song in the movie? God,
I hope not.
I think
there's going to be, but I hope not.
There probably will be.
Yeah.
We still have to do that episode.
I don't know what that is. That's my best impression. Yeah.
Whatever.
I
like that group.
We sat and watched it.
Yeah.
Although their music videos were cool. They're some cool. of them.
We'll talk about them.
Yeah, at some point. Did you do anything else? That game, you got lost? And...
That was basically it.
Yeah.
I didn't do much. I wrote another issue of Spectrum yesterday, actually. So that was good to get back running with that again, to get something else done. But that was about it for me. What about you?
What did I do this week? I had a few things. I never seen the movies Paradise Lost.
Okay. I haven't either.
They're documentaries. It's a, well, now three-part documentary series about the West Memphis Three.
Oh, yeah.
The three men who were accused of killing and defacing three children in 1993.
Yeah.
So I watched the first one last night, and I was pleasantly surprised. It's got a boring, like, it's got an old style of documentary, you know? Like, it's very much like Last Remnants of the 80s documentary kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of just footage of the actual trial.
Okay.
Which can seem boring, but it's almost 3 hours, and it's... I think each one is like 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
But
it's a lot of material.
It was solid. I didn't expect it to end the way it did. There's this weird, like, I guess Metallica did the music for the movie. And by that, I mean they just used Sanitarium and they did, like, one riff as, like, a background. And they kept using it at these weird points in this movie. Like, it was just, like shots of trees and stuff and people, like, standing or walking from one place to another. And just hear Sanitarium very distractingly just playing over. It's like, like there were times where I'm like, is the neighbor just listening to Metallica? Right.
Yeah.
Overall, it's really, really good. I'm kind of ashamed of myself that I haven't seen it. It took me this long to see it. I'm very excited to watch the next two. Because I hear they get even crazier.
I'd be into that. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of, like, true crime stuff with Abby. Like, almost halfway through Making a Murderer now.
Okay.
I'm very far behind.
That's, oh, man, that whole thing is,
it's
like...
nuts. His nephew is frustratingly dumb.
Yeah.
Like, his whole trial is just, like, I just want to, like, just grab him and just,
what's
like,
his name?
Fucking
like,
stop.
Brandon something?
Something like that. Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head, but... Oh, it's just, he's... Oh, he makes me so angry. I mean, the whole situation makes me angry, and he shouldn't be the one that's making me angry, but it's like him asking for a new lawyer, and he's like, do you think he has your best interest in mind? He's like, just say no. He's like, well, I mean, I guess. I was like, well, fucking, what are you talking about? No.
My favorite thing about Making a Murderer, though, is especially after, like, while dating a Wisconsinian.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it. Is the accents, definitely. I mean, yeah, those are Minnesota. I'm
love the way
sure,
they talk on the phone instead of like, yeah, yeah. And then there's like this long pause. So how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay. You know, it's.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to. I'm terrible
yeah.
at it. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. No,
oh.
It's just yeah. It's
yeah.
Never just like they just sit there and like yeah is just like everything.
Yeah, no, I didn't kill her now. No.
It's like they're aloha.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hello and goodbye. I love you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Much like the Black Eyed Peas once said, yeah, 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 yeah.
I think Bono also said it too. He's like, yeah, 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 yeah.
He did.
Great intro.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, we are going to be watching American Beauty. Sam Mendes directed, Alan Ball written, I believe Oscar winning. It didn't win Best Picture, but it was definitely nominated.
I think it did win Best Picture.
Did it? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Maybe it did. I'm bad with Oscars because I don't really care. But we're going to be watching that. I watched it when I was probably like, what, 17, 18?
Okay.
You know, and I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, like, yeah, Kevin Spacey's good and, you know, whatever. But it's kind of soured in my mind. Just became pretty lame. And I always remembered the moral of the movie being pretty, or the morals of the movie
yeah.
being very problematic, maybe.
Okay.
But we'll get into that in a little bit, but
I barely remember it. I think
yeah.
this was like one of the movies where like I'd be at my dad's house and he had HBO and my mom didn't. So I was able to watch a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
If he wasn't like hanging out, I'd totally just like be like, I'll watch whatever.
Cause yeah, you can see your boobs.
It's awkward to watch stuff like that with
it's cool.
your parents. But
unless it's A Simple Life, right?
Yeah. Unless it's A Simple Life when it's, exposed and edited. Or not
just
exposed.
Slightly blurred out or
yeah.
just like poking out of a shirt.
Exactly. But I don't know. I never finished the whole thing. I've never
really.
I gave it a fair shot, I should say. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to kind of watch. I mean, I just started House of Cards season 5 this week.
I never get any
Hearts. Or 4 or 5 or whatever is on. So I'm excited to watch some Spacey stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see how I feel, how all of us feel about the bag floating in the wind metaphor now.
Oh, yeah.
20 years later.
That is this movie.
Like,
that's right.
Oh, God. it's trash, man. Like, like.
Oh, yeah, our bag's in the wind.
And we'll watch Alan Ball before, pre-True Blood, Alan Ball. And actually, pre-Six Feet Under, actually.
Yeah.
And Six Feet Under is awesome.
This is what, 97?
I think it's later than that. I think it's like 99 and 2000.
Really? Okay.
Something like that.
We'll look it up.
Yeah. But yeah, let's go watch this Kevin Spacey movie.
Thank you.
Well, we just watched American Beauty by Sam Mendes and Alan Ball. Boy, Devin, what did you think of this film?
What is that impression?
I don't know.
What is that voice? I like it.
It just flew through me.
I like it.
Like rain.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I mean, just you, that anonymity right there just was like a beautiful moment in time that it just had to, I almost couldn't take it. It made my heart fill up like a balloon.
I feel like that was just me channeling every single character in this movie where it's like, it starts okay, and you're like, what the fuck is happening? It's like, is this a parody? Is this supposed to be ironic? I don't know. And then it's like, I'm just going to go with it.
I'm just going to go with it. Well, we should probably say, hey, Ron Fatica.
Hey, how's it going?
What's going on? Thanks for coming on our show.
Ah, my pleasure.
He was the one who suggested this film.
Yeah.
American Beauty. So, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I, one of the reasons I did that is because, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that it's overrated and things like that, but I really think that when it came out and its time period, it was really like a critique on, you know, the suburban American dream.
Mm-hmm.
At the turn of the century. So, and also I have some, you know, personal experiences that kind of parallel Lester's arc, not the dying part, but...
You're buying gay sex for money?
Not that part either. Maybe the weed.
Smoking weed and...
smoking the weed.
Lifting weights, yeah, in the garage.
Listening to Sean Paul.
Yes, exactly. Right.
So what was your first experience watching this? Did you see it in the theaters, I'm assuming?
No, I did not see it in the theaters. Because at the time, let's see, you know, I was, you know, raising a family, the kids were little. So a lot of the movies I saw were either, you know, probably on VCR at the time, you know,
yeah,
old Blockbuster and things like that. But it kind of struck a chord with me because I believe at that time I was probably not in a great marriage,
mm-hmm,
which did eventually end. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we're still on good speaking terms, so mm-hmm, I don't think there's any
many
potential
marriages.
Gunplay between us in the future.
That's good. <Yes. laughs> That's really good news.
Although at the time,
it's 2017, you never know anymore.
Exactly. Well, both my ex-wife and I are Italian. She's actually from Italy.
Oh, boy.
And yeah, she's very hot-tempered. And I think that if we did have a gun in the house, probably one of us may have been at
you
least injured.
Covered in olive oil.
You might want to watch out for like any like distant uncles or anything out there. She might have still.
Exactly. No, I think I covered that. So I think I'm okay.
Oh, damn. Are we
there's Frankenstein behind you, but other
nobody
than that,
knows
good.
I'm here. Don't worry.
Oh man, I don't know. This is like the movie to me, like kind of like I could see like it. There's a lot of things you'd relate to. You could relate to with that. Like a lot of marriages do end these days over similar circumstances. My parents got divorced because of a similar circumstance as in this movie.
Start smoking pot?
No, not quite that.
Blackmailing
but the cheating,
his boss?
The cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, like, there's a lot that, too, was just, like, I could relate to it, but it's, like, relating to not that arc, but, like, particularly that I had a problem with was just, like, the high school, like, going at, like he's supposed to be like kind of like the good guy and martyr a little bit by the end, mm-hmm, just because he like passed up having sex with a girl he shouldn't have been pursuing.
Yeah, that's
right?
A very I would call it an arc, but it seems like just a turn.
He like
yeah.
He at least had two strikes already because he, I mean, where like he already kissed her and like took her top off, like.
Right.
Yeah, and she's 17. Like,
yeah, like, we need to bring BJ back on for this episode.
She's too young.
Our resident expert on movies about teenage sexualization.
Right.
But,
I'm sure she loves that label.
Put that on your Twitter bio, BJ.
BJ right. Colangelo, expert in teenage sex.
Right. Although, as an actress, she probably had to be at least 18. Not that that makes anything about it better.
I think she actually was 17 in this movie.
Okay.
Seriously?
That's probably
a good thing.
How's that?
I think I heard something about that. Maybe
I saw, I was looking up the thing, what, Thora Birch. Yeah,
I have such a crush on her.
I do, yeah. Too, actually, like back in Hocus Pocus days. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I had a crush on her. I actually had a crush on Mina
Savari
as well, yeah. Because she was on like a couple episodes of Boy Meets World.
No, right. She was. I forgot about that.
And, yeah. But where was I going with that?
Young.
Oh, yeah. She was, I looked it up from her birthday. She was born in like 82, and this movie came out in 99.
So, right. Yeah, but you know, that was 20th century. That was like in the 1900s.
Yeah. That's,
it was the same year Star Wars came out. It's fine.
When you like, could
it's,
still
it's,
drop.
It was a weird time.
You could still drop.
17-year-old boobs were on screen.
Yeah.
Jar Jar Binks was around.
Everybody was still saying faggot in movies.
It's true.
Yeah. I think Chris Jar Jar Cooper. Binks was a bigger sin than...
underage boobs.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't disagree with you.
Right.
We all know Jar Jar is worse than underage boobs.
Yeah.
True. And midichlorians.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that came and went like nobody's business.
And Virgin Birth. And several other problems with that movie.
Yeah.
That was like...
Oh, the Jedi are coming.
Really, Queen Amidala was like the Kevin Spacey of the Phantom Menace movies.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. That.
It's a comparison you've heard often.
That's what I've been saying since 1999. I'm like, you don't that. See that she's obviously just supposed she's playing Kevin Spacey yeah. in American Beauty, a movie that came out 3 months before it came out.
Yeah.
First they ripped off American Graffiti, now they're just ripping off.
Exactly. I was always like, oh, just American Graffiti in space. You'll love it.
Perfect.
So... Why? Like, I'll get into my opinion, I guess. I always thought this movie, like, I saw it when I was probably 17 or so.
Okay.
On DVD. And I liked it enough. I don't know if I fully understood it. Mm-hmm. You know, just life experience and not understanding that what they was trying to portray necessarily. As time went on, I the more I thought about it, I just thought it was kind of lame.
Okay.
You know, like the bag in the wind metaphor and stuff like that. It's,
yeah.
Still, it doesn't. It's bad.
Yeah, like that part is weak.
I saw the message they were trying to convey with that.
The beauty in everyday life.
Yeah.
And the banality of it, and like it works. I think it works because Sam Mendes is so good and Alan Ball is so on the nose.
Right.
And like this movie is just like this collision of like I think Sam Mendes is like. One of the few mainstream true artists working right now. Spectre was garbage, but you know, I mean, Road to Perdition is a goddamn masterpiece.
Right. Like,
but Alan Ball, you know, like I like 6 Feet Under a lot.
Mm-hmm.
True Blood is, it is what it is. It's pulpy. It's, you know, I mean, whatever, but he's not a great writer. And like they balance each other out in a way where like this movie is equal parts great and equal parts not great.
Yeah.
And it's kind of all over the place. Like there's times where I'll be really sucked in and there are times I'll be like, what are they trying? Like, why are you guys doing this? Like I saw a homeless lady and if you just stare at her for a second, you can see God. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
Right.
Totally. That means nothing.
Yeah.
It's totally like a 90s movie, like late 90s, early 1000s.
It was definitely grabbed the zeitgeist of the time, like the American dream just basically dying.
Exactly.
And changing into something that is, at the time, unidentifiable
mm-hmm.
and weird. And, you know, you're like Kevin Spacey and Chris Cooper's character are both two sides of the same coin in what you would view as the American dream. And I guess Anne Heche, Annette Bening's character as well, like all three of them just kind of create this and I don't know where I'm going with that, but I mean that's basically right. Where I'm, you know, and I get it, I just don't know how well it holds up now, I guess.
Yeah, I mean for sure it spoke to the superficiality of mm-hmm. suburban life. I mean, you know, Angela, who only cares about attention mm-hmm. no matter how she gets it, you know, the wife with the roses and, you know, the perfectly, you know, mm-hmm. Manicured lawn. you know, the supposedly, you know, to be successful, you have to project success kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Kevin Spacey is just like going through the motions of his life, you know, going to work and just, you know, working for the corporation, just a cog in the machine until you know, I mean, when you talk about movies and, you know, stories, you know, the story arc, there, I think there's two triggers. One is seeing the cheerleader, and then, you know, that kind of ignites his imagination. But then when Ricky quits his job in front of him, it, like, inspires him to, like, yeah, what the hell, man? Why don't I just quit my job? I mean, what am I doing? Like, I'm not living a life anymore.
I kept watching this and thinking about Fight Club and how they're very similar. I think Fight Club's a little bit... It's really on the nose as well, but I think it kind of nails, like... I think it nails the irony of it. But I think a lot of people with Fight Club don't understand the irony. Like, Fight Club, people who have Fight Club posters don't get the irony of Fight Club.
No.
They also have, like, they were a generation of men raised by women. They think that's, like, really profound, or it's, like, not supposed to be.
Right.
Like,
yeah, and I think Fight Club, I think what a lot of people identify is just, like, ooh, the you know, the violence and the, you know, the savagery of it. But it's, like, no, there's a message underneath
it's new
there.
Masculinity.
Yeah. And I think American Beauty, in a way, just tried to shatter the American dream and wake people up. And I think to an extent, it probably did, for me, help me make those changes in my life, seriously. I mean, when the movie came out, I wasn't quite at that point, but like about 5 years later when we hit a rough patch, and our marriage kind of was not really... There was, like, nothing bad about it. It's just, like, it wasn't great. And it was almost like an old-school marriage. Like, you got married to get married and have kids. And I have, you know, two great kids from it. But one of the scenes that really struck home with me was when they pull up to the fast food, and she starts yelling at him, and he says, "You don't get to tell me what to do anymore." And that was, like, man, to me, that was, like, a smack that was really... really poignant. And I have an interesting story about that. Was at the Toronto Film Festival, I'd say about 5 or 6 years ago, Jason Reitman. Did you ever know hear about the live reads that they do?
Yeah, I know he's done... he did something recently that I wanted to go see, but...
Yeah, well, he used to do them, like, on a regular basis, every couple months. And
I think Ghostbusters, I think.
Yeah, and what he would do is, you know, he'd get the script, and then he would pick the people he wanted to do... to do the live read, and then he would announce it, and he would tell them, don't read the script before you do it. I want it to be like a real live read. Well, he actually did one at the Toronto Film Festival, and it was American Beauty, and it was at the height of Breaking Bad, so he had Bryan Cranston read the part of Lester. And I was in the audience, and that was a lot of fun. So it was pretty cool.
I mean, Kevin Spacey's amazing in this. Everyone's really, really great in this movie.
Right.
But Bryan Cranston would have been amazing. If we could get like a 10 years later, if this movie was made in 2010, get Bryan Cranston to do this.
Yeah. The other live read that he did that I thought was interesting, and of course they're not recording, that's the point. They're supposed to be like special events. But he did a live reading of Glengarry Glen Ross with an all-female cast.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, so that sounded really cool. And of course he picked fantastic, you know, current actresses.
Yeah.
But the other thing... that I was thinking about this film, or some of the, on the symbolic side, I almost think Ricky Fitz, I'm trying to decide if he's just an agent of change or if he represents death, because he finds beauty in the dead bird, he finds beauty in the dead woman, and then at the very end, he looks in, you know,
Lester's eyes.
Lester's eyes, and smile. Well, he's smiling because he sees that Lester's smiling, but... Yeah. I don't know if that's symbolic or just kind of coincidental, or I'm putting that on there.
To me, I don't know. I think he, almost by the end, like how I mentioned before, how I thought like Kevin Spacey is kind of like the martyr by the end, and he's the one narrating at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
I almost feel like Ricky Fitz seemed to be more of a main character, almost, to me. Like, if it was his story, like... Because to me it seems like here's this new kid in this new environment, and he's educating the people around him, and also, I mean, you see his plight as well, getting hit by his dad.
Right.
And he ends up taking control, and he gets the girl in the end, and he's the one left smiling at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess Spacey is too, but he's dead.
If anything, he's the most, the closest to a protagonist in this movie. I think almost everybody is pretty deplorable in this movie.
Right.
I think Kevin Spacey is horrible. I think he's a horrible human being. I think deep down he's a good human being who made incredibly bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
And both led him to essentially the same end. Like, when the choices he made before he saw the cheerleader, you know, he's like, I'm already dead anyway, masturbating in the shower, right, things like that. And that led to his death. And then it's just like this choice he makes to let go of everything also leads to his death,
mm-hmm,
and kind of destroys everybody around him other, right, than his daughter. Well, it was his daughter, other than, like, no, honestly, he destroys everybody's life around them.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of what why Ricky was the way he was. Like, it's very obviously symbolism. I wasn't sure how I felt about him. I don't know if I would see, I think he symbolizes death. I think if nothing else, he symbolizes life.
Okay.
Just his fascination with death.
People who are okay in life are usually okay with death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That's, yeah, I mean, like, he takes a picture of the dead bird,
mm-hmm,
the bag,
yeah,
the homeless woman, things like that. It's like those are parts of life as well. Like, the misery of life is, he finds beauty in it, which, I mean, I don't know. I feel like they kind of glossed over, in a, mm-hmm, sense. Like, I don't fully understood what he was meaning. They had that monologue where they're walking down the street when the funeral procession comes driving down and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I couldn't fully grasp him, and I wanted to get more of him, but I also wanted him to go away because he was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to something you said about, like, a lot of the people in the movie are deplorable. And I think that's probably the irony of the title. I think the title is really ironic. Mm-hmm. They say American Beauty when they're exposing all this ugliness, like in the cheerleader. You know, she's, yeah, everything about her is fake. You know, the father is a closeted homosexual who has Nazi paraphernalia but tries to present like this, you know, upstanding citizen. Almost everybody in the movie, except for maybe the neighbors, the gay couple.
Allison Janney,
who is stunning in that movie, because when I first saw that movie, I thought she was just some, like, off-the-street actress who, mm-hmm, like, was just there.
It's easy to look at her as doing nothing in that movie.
And
she's doing a lot.
Her, like, sadness, exactly, was poignant.
Yeah.
Exactly. And her, like, coming out of whatever deep hole she was in, mm-hmm, to, like, engage with reality and...
To see her crying at the end was...
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was rough.
But I think Janie is fairly pure. I don't think she's that ugly, other than, you know, she says stupid things about her father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, you know, Ricky has, like, an arc. I almost think, like, he is this steady presence throughout who is, like, changing everybody's status quo.
Yeah.
If you talk about status quo and...
Yeah, he doesn't change very much other, yeah, than he stands up to his father at the end.
Right, but, like, he changes his father's status quo. He changes, you know, Lester's and just about everybody's.
Jane and...
Yeah.
And he even actually with... what's the friend? Angela?
Angela,
yeah. Yeah, even her at the
tells
end.
Tells her she's ordinary.
Tells her up, yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse
but he's
than
not,
being,
like,
ordinary.
He doesn't do anything good for anybody. Like, all the changes are... Bad.
Not necessarily.
Who?
Jane. He positively affected Jane and told her.
Maybe.
He got her to accept herself.
They're moving to New York. They don't know. She's 16. They're moving to New York.
But yeah. I will agree with that, though, that he does get her to realize that she's not the freak, that she's normal.
Yeah, well, that she's relatively in a toxic friendship and that yeah. she accepts I mean, herself that's, for
that's,
being...
That's true. But, I mean, like, literally everyone, he sets in motion Kevin Spacey's death, which I yeah. guess, like, him... Well, he also sets in motion Kevin Spacey's downfall at the beginning.
Right. So that's why I see, like, he's at least the agent of change, obviously.
But, I mean, Kevin Spacey's downfall, but Kevin Spacey... At the end of the movie, is happier than he was at the beginning.
True.
Until he gets shot in the head, he's at the best
but
point he's
Annette
been.
Benning isn't, and will in all likelihood get, well, maybe not framed for his murder, but at least accused of it because she has the same mm-hmm. gun.
Yeah,
right.
His father is a murderer now.
He didn't really interact with Annette Benning that much. And his father, it's not his fault his father was a crazy bigot.
No, but he...
But his father witnessing what he thought was a homosexual act kind of triggered his father.
And then him playing into it yeah. by saying, yeah, I'm the best piece of ass in town, or whatever
yeah.
he said.
Yeah, I mean...
Pushed him over the edge.
How much can you fault him for that, though, after being hit for it and having to...
No, I get it. I'm just saying, if you're looking at it from, like, just logical, what would you do in that situation thing, like, yeah. I get it. But, like, just story-wise... He is the crux of... He is the reason all of this happens.
And what I'd like to yeah. add to that is, again, looking at the movie from a social commentary, American Beauty, the suburbs, everything looks great on the outside, but everybody's playing a role. And Ricky is the first one who's not playing a role. I mean, he does in certain places, like when he takes the job at the catering company. But that's
talking
just
to his father.
Yeah. As a cover, but for his own purposes, not to pretend. But yeah, you know, but he exposes reality to everybody else, mm-hmm. and I think that's what they were trying to do with the floating bag. That the bag is just reality. Like there's nothing superficial about the bag mm-hmm. floating around. That's stretching it.
It's like things happen to you in your life, and you're just going to get blown around in a beautiful and mess. Until
well, I think it feeds into the monologue at the end. It's like instead of trying to embrace happiness, I let it flow through me like rain.
Yeah.
In the same way, the bag just lets the wind just take it and dance.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I just like I don't feel like I got Ricky. I don't know if we ever saw the real version of him. Because he's so fake to everyone. He's different to pretty much everybody. Like, he's really smiley and happy to Tora Birch.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey, he's, like, the real cool guy that smokes pot. And he's, like, hanging out. And his dad, he's the stern, you know, yes, sir, no, sir.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like... I feel... If I were smarter, I'd be able to come up with a reason why I think he is not even... I don't want to say real because that sounds like such a cop-out, but, you know, like he is a manifestation or he is a projection. Like those characters are projecting a version of him to us. You know what I mean? Depending on who he's with.
So maybe he perfected the superficiality to best optimize every interaction he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So... you know, where like everybody's like a one note character, right? Lester's wife is, you know, she's just the, you know, shiny on the outside, happy, you know, real estate agent, just, you know, perfect mom, whatever. You know, Janie is the typical high school student.
Mm-hmm.
Lester is the sad corporate cog in the wheel. But Ricky's just like, whatever I have to be to make things work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he is kind of, he's in a sense no different than Kevin Spacey at the beginning then.
Right.
He's just smiling and gritting his teeth on the phone to a guy who's like, I'll just take your number. I don't know.
Well, maybe Ricky sees that what suburbia does to people, and you know, because nobody goes into a marriage and into a job thinking that I'm just going to be a drone in 20 years. But that's what I mean, and frankly, it does. Yeah. I mean, I worked for Rockwell Automation, which is, you know, thousands of employees for 18 years. And man, it's a sad situation, but life people, just happens. Yeah, and people just love it. And, you know, it's suburbia is all about just being a little bit better. You know, I mean, 20 years ago, two car garage was great. Now then there was three car garages and a, you know, 3,500 square foot house. And now, you know, four car garage, and you know, it just keeps growing. But it's like another one of my favorite scenes is when they're just about to have sex on the couch. Mm-hmm. And she says, "Don't spill the beer," because it's some fine Italian. And he goes, "It's just a couch." And she's, "No, it's this fine sofa." And he just loses it. Mm-hmm. He goes, it's just a thing. And that's what America, you know, the American dream does to us. It makes us think that things are worth something that they're not. And, you know, and I think I partially got away from that in my life, but I still look at other things and I'm like, why do I have that? And why do I, it's because it has some value to the outside world, not really to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that scene is very relatable. You know, I mean, I've had moments where it's just like, you have that moment of just like passion and everything. And it's like, someone's like, "Oh, don't spill that," or "Don't knock that over." I'm like, "God, fuck, really?" Like,
right. Be in the moment.
Be punk.
Punk as fuck, dude.
Yeah. I mean, you spill something, it's just a thing.
Have either of you seen Revolutionary Road? The other Sam Mendes movie with Leo and,
I did not see it in its entirety. Yeah, I did see scenes from it.
I feel like that movie is far less funny and ironic. That movie is miserable.
Right.
But it's, I think, he does a better job of what he's trying to do, or I think what he's trying to portray about the American dream in that movie. I think it's more relationship-based in that movie than he does in this. But I highly recommend that one if you haven't seen that one. Michael Shannon is insanely good in that movie. That's like the first time I noticed Michael Shannon.
Yeah, Michael Shannon is pretty awesome in just about everything he does. I think American Beauty is definitely like heightened and everything. I mean, it's not trying to be too realistic. I mean, it's a very drab palette except for the red in most of the scenes for the flowers. Whether they're covering Mina Savari's body or, the door, the car. I always wonder, it's like, how many days did he actually have to enjoy that car? Is it just like one? Did he buy the car one day and then die the next? That would really suck.
Yeah, it was probably like a week, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Devin, what did you think overall of the movie? Like, did you enjoy it, since it's your first time watching it all the way through?
I was telling Ron when you're outside smoking before the show.
I told you not to talk to other people off the podcast.
I was telling him, like, ironically, this past week, season 4 or 5 now, the new season of House of Cards came out on Netflix. And so I was watching that and just really getting back into my, like, Kevin Spacey love. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of brought me through a lot of the movie. Like, I just wanted to watch Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh yeah, I had crushes on these two chicks when I was a kid. And then, it did relate to me. Cause this is the first time I had seen the whole thing together.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a lot of parts of it on TV here and there. But it kind of got to me and I was entertained for most of it. Like George said, the writing wasn't quite up there, but the message did get across to me, because I always do find myself being lost in a moment somewhere, just looking at randomly, like, wind blowing in the grass, or
17-year-old girls. Or...
Yeah. You know, I just see a 17-year-old girl there and just get lost in their beauty. Not sexually, no. No, George, that's gross.
Well, you know, it's funny because you think about it, when you talk about 17-year-old girls,
they're hot, I guess.
Yeah, but I went to go see Paul McCartney, and he's saying, you know, she was just 17. It's like, come on, man.
Oh, yeah, there's...
you should stop singing that song.
There's a lot of creepy stuff that. Oh, yeah. Go back and
do you remember that one song? She's 16, she's beautiful,
and she's mine.
And she's mine. Yeah. Like, it's the most evil line of a song I think I've ever heard.
Yeah, you could do a whole podcast on creepy songs from the 60s and 70s.
Let's do a podcast on 17-year-old girls.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where we're at right now.
I mean,
we'll call Kevin Spacey.
How many times has this theme come back
Tumblr.
Around? This theme has come back around a few times now.
At least Steely Dan was classy, and they said, hey, 19.
I'm more of a Route 66 man myself.
Still got to be a teenager.
I like the elderly, the gilfs.
The gilfs, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Get down with that. 69 yeah. years old or not?
Mm-hmm. My favorite number, my favorite age, my favorite position.
There you go.
My favorite tumbler.
My favorite tumbler.
My favorite tumbler.
My two tumblers.
No, it's like, I don't know, like, this theme is constantly, like, comes up in movies and songs and stuff, just like the sexualization of teens. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I mean, I get it, young girls are cool, but, like, the law is the law.
Yeah.
Wait till they're 18.
Right.
God.
But I have a theory about that, too, because I am an older guy, and I'm older than Lester is in that movie. But I think one of the problems is, in general, it's like all of us, when we look at women, like, we think we're still in high school. We mm-hmm. still think, like, we're a young guy that's, you know, ready to
back
go out.
Back when our sexualization started.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, no, you're not. Dude.
The time has passed.
Yeah. Except for age-appropriate women.
Did that about, like, Bieber and, like, the Jonas Brothers mm-hmm. and stuff, too. Like, regardless, like, people always do it, and it's gross. And... But I understand where you're coming from. Like, that's, you are brought back to that age, like, where you, like, watching this, like, the fact that I was drawn to the girls, actresses of the movie, just because when I was kids, they were in Hocus right. Pocus and Boy Meets World, and it was something sure. I liked, and I was a kid, and I was like, oh, they're pretty. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense, and it's, I don't know, it's always, it's come up so many times in this movie, and, like, ever since we watched She's Too Young, like, mm-hmm. A lot of things I watch, I notice it more often coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I don't know, it gets seriously to the point where, like, and you start...
You're like, it's enough.
Exactly, because, I mean, it just encourages, like, it encourages the things in society, like when a girl can't wear a tank top on a 90-degree day
right.
in school right. because
I would say...
kids or creepy teachers can't stop looking at them.
I would say I think this movie, I applaud it for being, it made me uncomfortable at times,
mm-hmm.
which I think absolutely. Is impressive for a movie that made, that won Best Picture, and two, was like a box office smash. Yeah. And his first fucking movie, like right. that's fucking brave as shit.
This is his first movie? I did not.
Yeah, it's Sam Mendes' first movie.
Shit.
And I believe Alan Ball might have written something else, but
it was early in his career.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I feel like it was done the exact way it should have been done. I think it was the right amount of exploitation of the subject matter to make you feel uncomfortable. I think it's equal parts, like, sexy, but also very upsetting.
Yeah,
like it keeps cutting back to him just staring. I'm thinking specifically of the when she's on the dance floor or on the basketball court or whatever.
Right, and it's just her.
Yeah, and he's just staring at her and things like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
and you don't see her breasts until he actually has sex with her, and the moment she says she's a virgin, the illusion breaks. Everything he's projected on her shatters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like he I think it's a bit drastic of a change for him, but I mean thematically it works. But I think overall I think it was done very, very well. But it's still gross. Like, it's like,
but you know, it's really interesting because now that you say that, it's almost like Lester says, you know, towards the beginning that he's, you know, he's dead or he's, you know, sleepwalking or in a coma. Like, mm-hmm. he's not in reality at all. And one by one, all of the illusions break down. So the illusion that the company actually cares about him, gone. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, you know, his wife actually cares about him, gone. His daughter, you know, gone. And then
the belief that the age of consent matters, gone. Yeah,
right. or like this girl. See, and I think, like, because of her beauty, I don't think he even realizes what age she is, because she projects that mm-hmm. she's this sexualized woman. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that's on her. That's on that's on him. What he's building.
I don't I don't think it ever projects it on her.
Right.
I feel like she embraces the projections yes. of other men. For I mean, attention. She flat out says it, actually.
Yeah, yeah. She goes, I like the fact that they might be whacking off to me.
But, right. I mean, I don't think it ever blames her necessarily.
No, it does not blame her at all. But when that illusion is shattered, it's like that's the last thing, that's the last illusion that he had. And now he's fully in touch with reality, and that's the end.
I think if nothing else, yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, or in the same sense, it's if you consider this his pot smoking, working out in the garage, life, a second life,
mm-hmm.
that's his first breaking point. The first thing he realizes when his job doesn't care about him right. moment, you know,
yeah.
where it's like, oh, I made a mistake. Not even I made a mistake, but like, this isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? Yeah. That kind of thing. It's a break from reality again. And he just kind of lets go. And when she asks, like, how are you doing? He's like, I'm great.
Yeah.
Because he just, I don't know. Yeah.
And then he even says it like, I'm great.
It's kind of like, it's sad, though, because he's great because he doesn't care
yeah.
anymore.
Well, and he specifically says that when he goes to the hamburger place, they're like, oh, you might be overcalling. But he goes, no, I want the job with the least amount of responsibility.
Yeah.
And I could also sympathize with that too, because through my life, I started working at a hardware store like when I was probably 15 years old, and I worked there after school and on weekends, and I even worked there while I was in college. Then got out of college, got a job, so like I've been working for like 5,000 years. It's like, you know what, man, I don't want to have to have that burden, you know. And then my wife, when we had the kids, and I was fully on board with it, she stayed home. And I worked, and, you know, she took care of the kids, which is, she worked her ass off a lot harder than I did. But I had the burden of, I have to keep this job because that's the only way we pay our bills.
Mm-hmm.
And the two times I got laid off, I was lucky enough to find a job within a couple of weeks. But still, that's some stress. And I could see where he's like, you know what, fuck it, man, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm just done.
I mean, that just goes back to the Fight Club.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm like, instead of, you know, insomnia, he just has a terrible marriage, you know? Like,
right.
So this, I looked it up. I was wrong. It didn't win the Oscar in 1999. It won it in 2000. It came out in 99.
Oh.
Equivalent of 2000. It's dumb. Because 99 was Shakespeare mm-hmm. in Love. That's why I was like.
Okay.
Which, God, that fucking movie. But I looked up what it was up against, and I'm like, oh, of course it's going to win. Like, it was like the Green Mile, The Insider, The Sixth Sense, Cider House Rules. Like, yeah. You fucking kidding me? Like, The Sixth Sense is a good movie, but that is not a fucking, like, that is not a Best Picture contender.
Out of those, and which Green one Mile, would you have picked?
Like, this one. Okay. But I mean, like,
I'd say The Green Mile is probably a good contender, at least.
It's a worthy competitor in the rest of those. But
yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else came out in 99. Like, there's got to be more.
It's got to be something that,
like, I feel like Ghost World, also with Tara Birch, came out in 99 as well. Maybe 2000. And if that's the case, then that movie's far better than any of those four.
Probably. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I get it. Like, that movie's never going to win Best Picture.
No.
But, I mean, this movie's, it's not as lame as I remember it being, but it mm-hmm. has a lot of those moments. Like, the moments that people make fun of are just, you know what I mean? Like, the bag in the wind.
It is iconic, yeah. They make fun of that all the time. And then the wasp argument at the dinner mm-hmm. table is always done.
Well, and talking about, you know, when he was saying it makes you uncomfortable, mm-hmm. a lot of those scenes, for people who, you know, grew up in families, like, you know, that argued and things like that, and that really makes you uncomfortable. And, you know, and the part where he finally says, you know, pass me the, and he picks it up and throws it against the wall.
Yeah.
it's yeah. But I, and going back to what you said, there are a lot of places that made me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when I forgot about a lot of the scenes that were in the movie, and I decided to watch the movie with my daughter, who was probably in her like about around 14 at the time. Like, I have to go to the bathroom during this scene. I'll be back.
Yeah, but can't watch that.
Yeah. Uncomfortable.
Torture tubes.
After that, she never invited any of her friends over the house anymore.
You gotta stop covering them in rose petals, yeah. You fucking weirdo.
Yeah, she sees the way you look at them, Ron.
Yeah, exactly.
I was working out in the garage. Your rose petals and pot.
Yeah.
Hanging out with a next door neighbor kid that's also your daughter's boyfriend.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I think of all the Sam Mendes movies, I think I haven't seen Things We Lost in the Fire, which I heard not very good things about. Never seen Jarhead.
And, yeah, I saw Jarhead. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard it's good. No, he's in one other one I never saw, but I think like this and Away We Go were probably on the same level with John Krasinski and
That movie I loved.
It's a good movie, but it's kind of like you forget about it almost as soon as you're done with it.
Yeah, true.
You know, there's nothing inherently wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like kind of the same way with this movie. I feel like at the time it was like really, you know, like it was a really important, like, oh my God, I can't believe they made this kind of movie.
Yeah.
Almost like what Tim Burton was trying to do with Edward Scissorhands, just minus the fantasy element of it.
Right, exactly.
But I don't know. Like, I mean, Road to Perdition, Revolutionary Road, even Skyfall, I think, is a better movie than this.
Road to Perdition, I think, is a masterpiece.
Yeah. Anyone who says that it's not his best movie, I don't trust anyone's opinion.
If I'm anywhere near a screen that's playing Road to Perdition, I'm watching it.
Yeah. That movie's beautiful.
Yeah. Have you seen Take This Waltz, which is with Seth Rogen and Michelle Williams?
No. I've heard of that.
It's a much better and more realistic movie about a relationship that kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
It's a pretty rough movie. And actually watched that while I was in the process of breaking up with my second long-term relationship after my marriage. Mm-hmm. And when that was falling apart, it's like, man, I got good timing on these.
Sometimes you need a good cry movie.
Yeah.
Weird.
Or a nice kick in the pants movie, like, hey, yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I can't begrudge this movie for that. I get it.
Yeah. But, I mean, overall, I mean, it's visceral. It's, you know, like the emotions while you're watching it. And like you said, some of the hooks and quotes are memorable. But yeah, it definitely has its flaws. But, you know, again, I think from personal experience and, you know, things like that. And I like his line to close it out. You know, you may not know what I'm talking about, but someday you will.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a cautionary tale to all of us. It's like, yeah, you know, you're going to go through some shit.
I will say, I absolutely despise movies that start with, and here's how I die.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah, I'm gonna be dead at the end of this movie.
Well, like, I hated that at first because it's like, how are you fucking doing this? I literally expected the movie to end with like him in heaven talking,
yeah,
like
walking away in the
drinking a sex on the beach or something.
Yeah,
he's in hell. There's no way he's not in hell.
Yeah, he's got to be in hell. That's what they do to you in hell. They just force you to do commentary on all the fucking mistakes you made in your life forever. But then like as I like was watching more, it was kind of more like I liked to kind of set it up as like a murder mystery a little bit. Like who the fuck killed him?
Well, and I'm wondering if when it first came out, I'm trying to remember if it was like a spoiler as to who killed him, because obviously it starts with the daughter saying she wants to kill him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, the wife, you know, gets the gun. It's like, oh, she's going to kill him. And then, oh, surprise, it was the gay guy next door who's, you know, the closeted gay guy. Yeah.
I feel like that was entirely unnecessary at the beginning.
Yeah.
It added nothing to the story. And like, I was like, oh, who's going to do it? Because I kept sending it. They sent it up fine at the end. Like, it was already a who's going
to
do
it. A little bit too much exposition.
Yeah. I think it was to add to the
The
mystery of Ricky, make him seem a little more like dangerous.
Dangerous,
yes.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't know. But besides that, yeah, there was like this movie did so many things good. Should we get into final? I'm like,
Yeah, I just want. Do you guys remember the movie Savages that came out a few years ago? Oliver Stone movie.
I don't think I saw that one.
About like Mexican cartel. It's like 50% a good movie. Uh-huh. It's got Taylor Keach and Aaron Johnson in it. But the narrator of the movie is the two guys' girlfriend, and she's like, and here's the story. Just, you know, it's like, just because I'm telling you this story doesn't mean I'm not alive at the end of it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Hey guys, spoiler alert: the whole movie goes. They get to the end of the movie. It's a big shootout with the police and everything like that.
I did see that.
And then they rewind it. It's like, actually, that's not how it happened.
Right. Big cop out.
And she lives at the fucking end. And are you fucking kidding me? It's the fucking dumbest. It's a movie. It's like, I'm normally someone who's like, okay, bad ending doesn't necessarily ruin a movie. But God damn it, did that fucking
ruin
the
movie. That's one where
right, that was like the ultimate Bobby walks out of the shower.
Yeah. Fuck that movie.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, commit to an ending.
Oliver Stone hurt me.
Right.
Like, that's when you can't decide, like, how to end a movie.
I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, and then I saw that movie and his interview with Colbert, where he's talking about Putin. He's like, you know, he's just a social conservative. I'm like, yeah.
Like, yeah, Oliver Stone's always been
a piece of shit.
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, you talked about him saying at the beginning of the movie that he dies and whatever, and it's like,
yeah.
The only movie that's probably more guilty of that is the one that has it in the title, John Dies at the End.
Yeah,
yeah, but that one's like a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
That movie's fucking
that movie
great.
Is hilarious.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really
not good. To be confused with John Tucker Must Die.
Yeah.
The superior of the John films.
Third place, John Wick.
Fuck you. John Wick 2. John Wick Chapter 2 is fucking incredible. It's so much better than the first one.
I'm a fan of John Q. Personally.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Let's hijack a hospital. Make a point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get into final thoughts. Well, I guess since I'm the one I had to be converted on.
Yeah.
Let's start with me. Overall, I liked it. I think I have issues with it. I still think it's a little corny. I think there's issues, like the bag scene. And the bag scene didn't bother me as much as the funeral procession monologue with the homeless woman. I'm like, that whole scene, all that dialogue makes zero sense.
Right.
It
could be cut from the movie and...
Yeah, you would get nothing. You wouldn't lose anything from
it. Right.
But overall, like, everyone's incredible in this movie. Chris Cooper, I fucking love Chris Cooper.
Right.
Kevin Spacey, probably one of his better roles. I mean, I haven't watched House of Cards. I've watched, like, an episode or two. Everyone loved him.
Sorry to, like, snap in there. Like, he totally... They pulled from this for House of Cards, or he must have, his performance. There was a particular moment when he's meeting, at the beginning, when he's meeting, like, his wife's future adulterer partner.
The king of real estate?
The king, yeah. When they say something snarky, or he says something stupid, and Kevin Spacey just stares at the camera with, like, a blank face, but you could tell he's just, like, seething behind the eyes.
Right.
That's totally, like, a House of Cards thing.
I'll do whatever you like, honey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And again, that's that superficiality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's him breaking. And yeah. Yeah, I mean, everyone's great in this movie. Sam Mendes, you know, I mean, this movie looks beautiful for the most part. I think it's not full. It doesn't have Roger Deakins, you know. Right. So when Sam Mendes teams up with him, it's like they're unstoppable. But
yeah,
I mean, it looks great.
Yeah.
I think the script leaves some things to be desired, but it's a solid watch. I mean, for 2 hours, it's not bad. Like, I mean, I've seen worse. I mean, it's far better than Shakespeare in Love.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like, but yeah, this is a hit for me. Not necessarily a bullseye, but you know, I'm turned around on it a little bit.
Okay.
For me, I don't know. I thought that it could have been done way better than it actually was done. Like, I liked a lot of the ideas and the message they were going for behind it. I don't think it quite reached its potential. At the same time, like, I did attach to the acting performances as well. And it did it enough to where it interests me. And I don't get all of the hate for it. I get a little bit of the hate. But I don't know. I mean, lines like, everyone relates to, there's nothing worse in life than being ordinary.
Right.
Like, everybody wants to stand out at some point or another, even if you're like total just agoraphobic person who can't socialize or anything. You want your moment in the spotlight sometimes. Like, you want to be noticed by at least someone.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but like I feel like that's part of that zeitgeist we were talking about, and how it's the exact opposite of what the American dream was even 10 years ago, where it was fit in. That's great. That's amazing. And now it's everyone wants to be the spotlight. Everyone wants to be the different one that's important, you know? So I think that's maybe they didn't address it correctly, or they were a bit on the nose, you know, but I think, if the fact that we can have this conversation, I think, helps. Yeah.
Like, it almost, like, if they were to, like, they're remaking so many just old movies that are just, like, standalone movies, cult classic type things they're remaking now. I mean, I guess this wouldn't be considered a cult classic because it won Best Picture. Yeah. But, like, if they were to remake this now, like, with the advent of, like, the internet and everyone being able to, like, stick out, like, throw that theme in there too, I think that really connects, because I think that theme of not wanting to be ordinary is even more apparent now, like, with everybody. You can be a YouTube star. YouTube has a YouTube Red channel now, where you can, like, all their shows are, like, starring people who got famous on YouTube.
Yeah,
like,
I got YouTube Red. I pay for Google Play Music.
Right.
I know, I get it. That's right. $10 a month for both of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I connected with a lot of the themes. I liked that the high school band was playing on Broadway, because we played that back when I was in high school band.
American Beauty.
American Beauty. Watching Kevin Spacey.
American Beauty. Saw Tora Birch's boobs. Quit trying to bang my dad.
Yeah. Why?
Because you're 17. Now, woman.
Stay away. Nice. That works perfectly.
You're not a woman. Yeah.
That's when Britney Spears comes in.
Because you had your period. Don't mean you're a woman.
Oh. Man, Kevin Spacey chafing his carrot to a teenage girl.
Yeah.
Which he also does in House of Cards, I think.
Oh, yeah, true. Probably.
I don't know if she was a teenager, but she was a young gal.
Close enough.
But
the age difference is probably greater.
Yeah, at that point. It was a hit for me, though. I never gave it a chance when I was a kid, never got back into it, and I wasn't into Kevin Spacey at the time. And
I think he gets a bum rap overall.
I think he does. Yeah. I think he does.
He's
Because he always plays those edgy characters on the edge. And sometimes he's a good guy or a bad guy, but he's always like on some kind of ragged edge.
More often than not, he does interesting stuff.
I feel like some people confuse him for Kevin Costner
sometimes,
because they were like the both famous Kevins at the same time. And I think that might be why he gets. I used to confuse them.
I think I always tell people, I'm like, if you don't like Kevin Spacey, watch Nine Lives, the movie that came out last year, where he plays a rich businessman who gets turned into a cat by Christopher Walken to bond with his family.
Awesome.
And he, instead of talking, you just hear his inner monologue as a cat. Uh-huh. And it's a lot of, you gotta be kidding me.
Modern day Garfield.
Directed by the director of Men in Black.
That's awesome. Yeah.
In a series of unfortunate events on Netflix.
Yeah. I think for myself, I mean, I still appreciate the movie. I mean, I know it's aged a little bit, and I think maybe they could have handled his obsession with, you know, a young nubile child differently, you know, looking back. And, you know, I don't want to say, ooh, you know, it was 18 years ago. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at the way pop culture was in those years, it was pretty nasty.
Maybe they're still using home phones.
Maybe they weren't quite. Maybe they weren't quite like endorsing. Like,
I mean, no, they're definitely critique. I mean, you know, criticizing it.
But
you don't have to show it either. I mean,
exactly.
he could have snapped earlier before he undressed her.
Yeah,
you know, he could have just said, like, when she came down and, you know, put her hand on his muscles, he could have said, oh, wait a second.
I mean,
oh, this is too real.
Yeah.
Yes and no. I don't know. I agree with you, but I also think that showing that he's willing to go all the way, as opposed to just putting his hands on his her shoulders or something like that, and that he's going to do it. And then she says that, and then it's just like, oh, it's instead
it
of
needs
being like
that break.
Yeah, instead of like a hug or a kiss or whatever it is, like it's showing that he's invested. He's going.
Right.
You know. Like,
so you don't, I guess you need that.
I mean, I understand, like, the Jaws theory of, like, you don't have to show it all the time, or you don't have to show everything, but sometimes it's like, you don't want to run that risk of not getting that he's truly that deep.
Right.
Like, I mean, they hammered that home with his dream sequences or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
But I mean, those are just dreams. When he's in reality, he's still there.
Right.
Until those words are uttered.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, you know, I think for myself, it holds up. And like I said, I have a lot of, a lot of things that I relate to from, relationship points of view that I've been through. Yeah, appreciate you guys taking a look at it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, nice. Thanks for having us watch it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. You know, I'll have to come up with some other ones. Maybe someday we'll do The Postman.
Oh, Jesus. Good Kevin Costner.
Well, when you said Kevin Costner.
Of all the Kevin Costner movies, God. Like, I mean, my only context of that movie is literally the Simpsons joke where she's watching the commentary and she's like, oh, poor Kevin Spacey. He gets such a bum rap. And he comes out from behind the TV. He's like, oh, you're sweet for saying that. He was just actually narrating the commentary. all of Kevin Spacey. Do Waterworld.
I could probably talk about Waterworld. Kevin Costner, you said Spacey.
Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Waterworld.
See, it happens all the time.
I'd watch Waterworld. I need an excuse to watch Waterworld.
I like Postman. I really do.
Okay, well, if you want to come back up for The Postman.
I just shot my credibility. They'll never have me back.
This movie, do we want to do plugs? I have a story. This inspired me. This movie inspired me because, like, no matter what you've done wrong, you always have time to correct your mistakes, you know.
Find redemption.
Kind of, yeah, at the end, he kind of was like, wait, what am I doing? And he actually changed and was like, I need to be better. So do you remember, George, a couple weeks back, I told you how I was late to work because of the running marathon?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a whole story there.
Yeah. I was very...
Well, that was a different employee. You're a new employee.
Oh, yeah, that was... He told me about this story, and he wanted. Forgot if that guy
You're
was fired since
then.
I'm just like a robot clone that just keeps getting killed off every few days.
Why would you clone a robot?
Why not?
They're robots. You just make a new one.
Yeah, it's still a clone.
You don't clone the Terminator.
It's the exact specifications. Do clones have to be completely bionic?
Yeah, bionic.
Biological?
Biological,
yeah.
Yes, they do. It's clones. Or they're just reproduced machines.
Exactly.
Renamed. Like every iPhone.
Yeah, or the Terminator.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was all pissed off about this race, and there was I got added to the Detroit Shoreway community message board.
Right.
And there was a big tiff on it involving Tim. He pissed a lot of people off.
Yep.
I was kind of on his side.
Cornette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm like reading some of these comments, and I was like, these people are like not taking into account so many things. And so I was like, started typing, and I was like, I was. A couple weeks ago, my best friend died. My friend died. And I was on my way to see her. She had something to say to me that she only wanted to tell me. And now I'll never hear it from her words because there was no exit or way to get out from the Detroit Shoreway community.
Yeah, I remember.
I wrote this big, long story. And it was really good and juicy, and it would make so many people sad. I hit post. Hit post on this story. That was completely untrue. But before I could delete it, I deleted it like almost right away because I was like, I don't want to be like these fake news people. Like, I don't want to be causing up this tiff. I was going to write something at the end too where I was like, this isn't true, but it could happen. Blah, blah, blah. A comment after the fact. But I was like, that's just bad karma. So I deleted it. But right before I could delete it, none other than Ron Fatica, sad face, reacted to it. And I haven't seen you since. I haven't mentioned it since.
Kind of figured.
And I was like, oh my God, I have affected my friend Ron. He probably was very sad. Yeah,
especially
for me.
Since the only place you posted about it was a lake.
The Detroit Shoreway.
It's it's a very active message board.
Right.
Actually,
posts about it
I get
on your,
so many
your
notes.
Your own Facebook page. And as someone who just lost a friend,
well,
go fuck yourself.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm a fucking terrible person. I have to delete this immediately. I have to bit on my chest. I had to get that off
my
chest, Ron.
To be honest with you, I typed, I call bullshit, and then I erased that and put the sad face. At least that's what I was thinking.
So
it was too convenient.
So the moral of the story is stick with your first instinct.
I'm going to type I call bullshit on all of your statuses now.
I'm pretty much bullshit.
I love my girlfriend so much. No. I call bullshit.
What? No, that one's true, goddammit.
According to the podcast, episode 308.
But then you deleted it 3 minutes later.
It was like 2.5 minutes.
It was just right.
It was terrible, and something horrible is probably going to happen to me like pretty soon.
Well, Devin got his plugs in. Ron, do you have any plugs?
Well, actually, I'm going to be doing audio for an improv show at Bar Louis, of all places. It has a nice basement,
oh, nice.
By
Which
the
one?
Way. The one downtown on West 6th.
Nice, nice.
And it is Mona and something, and I don't know the name of it, but it's my good... improv friends. Why don't you give your plug and then I'll find out what this is so I can...
By the time this comes out, this will be coming out probably...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It'll
be long gone.
5th or the 12th.
Okay. But I'll be doing audio for various shows. I'm helping out Mike Polk now on his Tuesday night shows at Hilarities.
Okay,
nice.
Those are every other Tuesday.
I keep meaning to go to one of those. Polk is fucking funniest.
Yeah, and, you know, he's got Chad Weaver who, you know, needs to... use his imagination a little bit more because I think Chad's getting a little bit stale. You know, he's always doing the exact same thing.
Just those goddamn pants.
Yeah, pots and pans. That's my favorite.
I can't even say anything stale because I haven't seen anything
in
so long.
You also haven't been up in over a year.
Haven't been up in, or anything. So I stayed fresh in the bag.
Devin, do you have anything to plug other than your fake dead friend?
No, I'm perishable.
Good. Well, by the time this comes out, my drive-in will already have happened on the 8th, which was Wet Hot American Summer. If this comes out on the 5th, which I don't think it will, go to that. It's 8 o'clock at May Halls. If not, August 12th at May Halls in the apartment, I'm showing Scott Pilgrim vs. the World for Edgar Wright Month. Probably my favorite Edgar Wright movie.
The movie's so good.
So, yeah, I wanted to get some people in there, get some people who are like really into it.
How did the Pink Flamingo one go, by the way?
It's gross as fuck.
Yeah.
When the man like performs stretching his asshole to everybody.
Nice.
Well, my brother walked out way before that. but, I mean, yeah, we had people walk out, which is probably the biggest honor you can get for showing Pink Flamingos. But, yeah, it was fun. I got really drunk. Like really, really drunk
because
I was drinking gin and tonics all night.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good one. I'm hoping that the Wet Hot American Summer is even more fun and bigger. And
I like legitimately need to request off for that one.
Yeah,
because that one's gonna be so fun. Keep meaning to go, but I always work on Friday and Saturday nights.
Well, get your shit together. 8 o'clock Saturday nights.
Trying, son.
I have to get
second
to one
Saturday
of those
every
too.
Month. Yeah. After that, I don't have anything planned. I don't think I have anything scheduled either, but I'll get into that when we get there. But
yeah.
Cool. I don't think I have anything else. I think that's it. Just listen to the podcast, rate, review us. Tell it to your friends, tell it to your mom. For everybody who's like, how do you listen to a podcast? I'm like, there's a lot of places. Like, I've been talking to a lot of older people. They're like, I don't know how to do it. I'm like, how do you do it? You just throw it on the Facebook?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, we just... It's on iTunes, it's on Google, it's on SoundCloud, it's on Stitcher.
Oh, wait a minute, you mean we're not on the radio right now?
Oh, we're on the radio. 69 Radio.
Live.
Mr. Classic.
Mr. Classic, what's your request?
Mr. Classic! Just listen to the Mr. Classic in my garage.
House party.
You guys got anything else?
No, it was a lot of fun.
Jokes
really,
yeah. Follow us at Second Shot Pod, as always.
Yeah.
And all that
if you want to come on, Ron, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
If you know anybody or if you want to come on again, let
us
know.
I'll try to find something more worthy than the Postman.
Or maybe I'll force you to watch something.
That's going
to
be
we'll do Avatar until someone likes it.
Oh, no. It's not going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen. Follow us. All that good stuff. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
All
right,
goodbye. Because you had to be a big shot, did you? You had to open up your mouth. You had to be a big shot, did you? All your friends were so knocked out. You had to have the last word last night. You know what everything.
Seems to be a thing with beverages more than anything, like comparisons to like the devil.
Yeah.
Like any kind
that,
of
that. People, music,
yeah.
Movies, ideas.
Well, I mean, out
but
of,
mostly drinks.
I mean, edible things. Out of things you ingest, like.
Presidents.
It's like Colin, I was thinking about Milwaukee's best ice called the Beast.
Beast.
It's like, oh, drink the Beast.
I wouldn't necessarily think that's the devil.
There's Hop Devil.
Yeah, but that's like a direct... That's not like... Beast could be a lot of things. Like,
well,
I don't think...
It's the Beast.
I don't think the Beastmaster was the Devil Slayer.
You ever seen Beastmaster?
He's just fighting the devil with bears.